Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This is the broadcast for April the 22nd in the year of our Lord, 2024. This is our 2 of 2, the goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, to promote God, family, and country, to do so on your radio. Dr. Bradley and I chatting for the first hour about the dishonest articles promoted about me and Sheriff Mack and others who attended our conference last Wednesday. Wow, it is a clown fest of dishonesty, I'll tell you that right now. Basically, Sheriff Mack and Sam Bushman challenge any member of the clown media to an open public debate. They won't take us up on it because they're chicken. But Lowell Nelson with me, and Lowell, I also offered from the stage in Las Vegas before cameras and everybody in the world. Sam offers $1,000 to any member of the dishonest media who can find any examples of either Sam or Mac involved in any violence or violence of any kind. What do you say to that?
I think that's very clever of Sam, because if they actually step forward wanting to claim that prize, then they name themselves as a member of the dishonest media.
But they can't show any examples, though. That's why nobody will take me up on the claim, because there isn't any.
Exactly.
In fact, the Southern Poverty Law Center tried to lie and claim we were violent at one of our speeches back, 25 years ago or so. We were speaking in Valley Forge. and the Southern Poverty Law Center snuck into one of our events, and then they came out and said we were promoting violence, and we had video to prove to the contrary, and they lied and got caught and had to retract. So the Southern Poverty Law Center has already retracted over this reality check. But I threw down the gauntlet to the mainstream press, I'll tell you that, Lowell.
Awesome. Glad to hear it, Sam.
All right. Speaking of correct information, Lowell Nelson's with Campaign for Liberty, RonPaulInstitute.org. Doing a great job, really. I want to talk about this reality check. They would say this is anti-government, but I would say Lou Rockwell's spot on this, Lowell.
He sure is, Sam. This is a really great article by Reichard White, posted at lourockwell.com. It's entitled Vaudire, Jury Nullification, Dred Scott, and Donald Trump. The reason this column caught my eye, Sam, is because it's dealing with, because of the Trump trial. You know, the hush money Trump trial that's occurring as we speak in New York. Last week they had voir dire for that trial. Now, that voir dire is a process by which members of the jury are selected. And that selection process, it's called voir dire. It's a Latin word, maybe? Voir dire? Anyway. It's a bastardization of the trial by jury that we had in this country, for years until it changed in the middle, about 1850, 1860. And so Reichard White says correctly here, quote, one of the strongest protections against runaway government was crafted into the Constitution of the American Republic by founder James Madison. It was trial by jury of 12 of your randomly chosen peers. The strength of this protection is seriously underrated. Since conviction requires unanimous agreement by the jury, any one of the 12 jurors can block any prosecution by simply voting not guilty. They can do this based not only on the asserted guilt or innocence of the defendant, but also on the validity and acceptability of the law itself. End of quote. Right? So judging the justness of the law, as well as judging the facts of the case, is what trials by juries were intended to do. And this is explained very well, Sam, in an 1852 essay by Lysander Spooner entitled Trial by Jury. This short essay is a booklet that every American, especially every American who values liberty, ought to own and ought to read once a year, really. The principles in this essay are timeless, And having them in mind would be most helpful, in my opinion, in the restoration of the right of trial by jury. Because what we have now is a slim whisper or a shadow of what we once had. And so Reichard White explains what happened here in this column. He basically summarizes what Lysander Spooner said in his treatise. He says, quote, "Jury nullification serves to block legislatures, and especially the enforcement apparatus, from engaging in questionable legal adventures. This helped keep the whole system straight and nipped bad, stupid, and unpopular legislation in the bud. No sense in spending all the time and money on something a jury would likely cancel," end of quote. So jury nullification was widely understood, really. It was accepted, very well understood, and used regularly until, like I said, about the middle of the 19th century, which is about 1850. Turns out that southern state slave owners were frustrated because, as a result of jury nullification, most randomly chosen northern juries would have at least one not guilty vote, and thus they would refuse to return an escaped slave to the southern state slave owner, even if the owner proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that he owned the slave in question. And so, to satisfy the slave owners, northern courts developed this process called voir dire. Now, that did not exist in the British common law, which was the model after which James Madison crafted our trial by jury. Voir dire really amounts to official jury tampering, because during that process, the judge will now always ask the jury pool something like this. Would you have a problem voting guilty if you were convinced that the defendant was guilty of the crime charged? If so, please raise your hand. Right? So a judge would ask that question, and if anybody in the jury pool raised his hand, then the judge would excuse that member of the jury. In other words, not allow him to be in the jury. So Reichard White says this, quote, "All potential jurors who raise their hands are summarily dismissed from jury duty. Thus, juries are no longer randomly chosen and are instead inherently biased in favor of the system." This has pretty much snuffed out jury nullification. With voir dire, the system could now impanel a jury, which can now convict anyone of anything. Being bald, or failing to genuflect correctly, for example, or failing to wear your Star of David. You might, of course, fail to raise your hand, and you are not obliged to pay any attention to the judge's jury instructions. End of quote. So, well, Sam, you know, I hope this gives our listeners some good ideas for when they're called for jury duty. You know, I read the 42 questions that each of the potential jurors in the Trump case was obliged to answer, trying to decide how I would answer each one of those questions. And really, it's not easy to do. Some of them require a lot of thought, because you have to answer the question truthfully, but in a way that you don't tell the prosecution that you perhaps disagree with the law upon which the accused is being charged, for example. Or you mustn't appear too eager to be on the jury. You mustn't appear too indifferent to the jury pool. I mean, it's very interesting. I think the main lesson here is to know that voir dire is legal tampering with the jury, so the jury's not a random group of your peers anymore, but rather is a filtered group of individuals who are selected because they are most likely to submit to authority, the most likely to follow the judge's instructions, and most likely to return a guilty verdict even when the law is unjust or unlawfully applied. So if it's over anybody, Sam, anybody who has not read Trial by Jury by Lysander Spooner, please get that treatise. You can find it for free on the internet. You can find it as a PDF on the internet. Just download it for free. There's no cost. Or you can sometimes find the actual booklet. I have both. I have both the PDF and I have the booklet. And Trial by Jury is one of those timeless treatises that you must have in your Patriot Library, and read it every year, because these principles, these timeless principles that Lysander Spooner outlines in this essay, will help. They will help us. They will help us because they'll help to reinstitute trial by jury.
Go ahead and skip the break. Trial by jury is critical, and that's been destroyed in America to a great degree, is the sad part about this. You know, they think about how many questions, 42 questions or whatever the number is and stuff like that. It's not a jury of the peers. And think about a jury of peers. What would a peer of Donald Trump be, by the way?
Well,
would it be you and me?
No, he would be a fellow like entrepreneur, probably someone who's maybe invested in real estate, someone who works with banks and financial institutions, right? I mean, aren't those his peers, Sam?
Yeah, somebody that would be involved in maybe in construction might be another good fit.
Mm-hmm.
Some people who, you know, but the jury of peers, what they really got in this New York jury and stuff like that is they've basically selected a group that is absolutely hostile to Donald Trump. They hate him in every way that I can see. They won't give him any fair trial or adjudication in that at all. They won't look at the facts. And then you take that manipulated, specifically selected jury, and then you put in front of them dishonest judges' orders about what they can talk about, what they can include, what they can't include. Before you know it, you don't have an honest, open, fair trial at all, lol.
No, they structure the jury instructions and they structure the voir dire and so forth in such a way that they can nail the defendant on the law. And so by number one, if the law's unjust, that doesn't matter if you can persuade, if you successfully persuade the jury that they have to convict, even if the law is not just. And so it's really in that essay, Trial by Jury, as I recall, Sam, another point that Lysander Spooner makes is that when it says your jury of your peers, these are people who know you. People who are familiar with you and your background, they know whether you're trustworthy, whether you're honest, or whether you have integrity, or whether you don't. And if you're a scumbag, or whether you're an honest person, these are people who know you, and yet today's voir dire process, they will summarily dismiss anybody who actually knows the defendant. I mean, the very people who are best qualified to render a judgment in the cases are no longer given an opportunity to serve on juries. So it really has been changed and distorted, and I don't know if the right word is bastardized, but it's been corrupted. And that's the word I was looking for, corrupted. The trial by jury process has been corrupted by, for well over 100 years. We're approaching 200 years of corruption of this precious right, which Lysander Spooner called the Palladium of Liberty, is trial by jury. So we need to get back to it, but we can't get there unless we understand the principles of trial by jury. And that's why I'm recommending to everybody this morning, Sam, to get and read the essay Trial by Jury, written by Lysander Spooner.
Amen to that. In my opinion, great. Great education at lewrockwell.com. It's really important to kind of understand these things. The more the American people can understand, man, there's just so many topics of liberty to educate people on. It's just amazing. Great, great column. We also have the right to a peaceful assembly. Judge Andrew Napolitano, ronpaulinstitute.org with this one, lol.
He walks us through the right to assembly in his column posted at lewrockwell.com last week. This again is he's shining a light on the activities of the judiciary, the judicial branch of government, which I really appreciate, because I don't think we shine as nearly as much light on the judiciary as we ought to do. He writes this, quote, "Last week, the Supreme Court effectively abolished the right to assembly in three southern states." Here is the backstory. The right to taunt the tyrant, whether the tyrant be a king or a president or local police. The right to taunt the tyrant is among the natural rights of expression integral to all persons. Your rights to think as you wish, to say what you think, to read what you choose, to publish what you say, and to do this alone or in concert with others without a government permission slip or fear of government reprisal, are natural human rights possessed by all persons above the age of reason. Expressing oneself in concert with others is also a constitutional right, as the First Amendment expressly prohibits Congress from making any law infringing upon it. From and after the ratification of the 14th Amendment, the congressional prohibition applies to all branches of government, legislative, executive, and judicial, and to all levels of government, local, state, and federal, end of quote. Now, Sam, I do not believe the 14th Amendment was legally proposed, nor was it legally ratified. And the Utah Supreme Court, in a case entitled Diet versus Turner, in 1968, explained in great detail why its proposal was illegally done and why its so-called ratification was illegally done. But most people today believe that our Constitution was legally amended by the 14th Amendment. And so, for the purpose of reviewing the remainder of this column, we're going to assume that it is a legal amendment. So Napolitano continues here, quote, "The companion right is the right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. What once were written petitions have today become mass demonstrations at which folks articulate their antipathy to government or cultural trends, expecting extensive media coverage and hoping that their views will resonate with the public at large and bring about the change they seek, or at least a general awareness of the grievances that vex them," end quote. Now, Sam, my guess is that folks 250 years ago were so consumed with scraping out a living that they didn't have much time to assemble to petition the government for a redress of grievance, so they probably did written petitions a lot more back then than they do today. Because nowadays, more people have more free time, right? Because most essential needs are taken care of. So assembling to demonstrate or to rally for a cause, I believe, is far more common nowadays than it was 200 years ago. Judge Knapp writes this, quote, "This right is as old as America." He's talking about the right to peaceably assemble. "It began in pubs in the 1770s in Boston, New York, Princeton, Philadelphia, Baltimore, and Charleston, where revolutionaries met to complain about oppression by the British. These meetings produced county, regional, and statewide gatherings that adopted early local versions of the Declaration of Independence, which itself was adopted unanimously by the Continental Congress in July of 1776. The right to assemble in public and complain about the government is so well rooted in American history that it is hard to imagine our secession from Britain coming about without it. The colonists accepted it as normal and natural, and when they gathered to shake their fists in the tyrant's face, metaphorically, of course, as King George was 3,000 miles away, they did so without fear of retribution until now," he writes. Because then he explains that in 2016 in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, a fellow named DeRay McKesson organized a rally outside a police station to protest what he claimed was excessive uses of force by the police. But someone at the rally, and it wasn't McKesson, somebody at that rally, Sam, threw a rock that hit and seriously injured a police officer. Well, that police officer did not sue the person who threw the rock. He sued McKesson, the fellow who organized the rally. McKesson had not thrown the rock, had not encouraged anyone to commit any violent act, and yet that police officer sued McKesson. And the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, which covers Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas, permitted the suit to move forward. McKesson asked the Supreme Court to intervene, and it declined to do so last week. That's what Judge Napolitano says here in his column. He's shining the light on the judicial branch here. And so this case is not over, right, because it hasn't been adjudicated yet, hasn't been appealed yet. And I'm not quite sure how it was that McKesson was able to to ask the U.S. Supreme Court to intervene, because usually appellate courts do not get involved until after a final judgment has been rendered by a lower court. But he got to ask the U.S. Supreme Court to intervene, and they declined to intervene. And so here again, Sam, I believe something like this should be settled in a state court, not a federal court. Number one, because I do not believe the 14th Amendment was a legal amendment to the Constitution, which I've already covered. But two, because this is a domestic issue for which a state has plenary authority. That's complete authority. And for which the general government has no authority, right? We're talking about the police power of the state. And when somebody gets in a scuffle, a fist fight, or somebody throws a rock and hurts somebody, that is a domestic issue and should be settled by the state. The general government has no business poking their nose in that issue. Well, so Judge Knapp, he summarizes this for us. He says, quote, "We have two fundamental legal issues intertwined here. The first is freedom of expression, and the second is vicarious liability." End of quote. Now, that's the first time I've heard this term, vicarious liability, Sam. But it's an interesting term. Judge Knapp continues here, quote, "Do excessive rights evaporate merely because someone in the audience became violent?" Well, until last week, the universal answer to that was no. Indeed, the courts have many times rejected the so-called heckler's veto, whereby a person adverse to the speaker causes a disruption that results in personal injury or property damage, and the harmed parties sue the speaker. In those cases, the courts have held consistently that unless the speaker's words command and produce immediate lawless behavior, the speaker is not liable for the heckler's violence. The modern jurisprudence has uniformly held that the right to free assembly is so well rooted in our history, so necessary for effective free expression, that it actually tolerates the violence that sometimes accompanies it. Were this not so, then hecklers would have their veto, and there would be no such thing as free assembly. End of quote. So that's another term I hadn't heard before, Sam, the heckler's veto. So here's two new terms that I learned in reading this column last night, vicarious liability and the heckler's veto. And so, Judge Knapp digs into history again, one more incident from history to illustrate one's right to peaceably assemble. He goes back to 1946, where a Roman Catholic priest in Chicago gave an incendiary speech that criticized President Harry Truman. There were lots of sympathizers in the attendance, and there were lots of hecklers in attendance at that speech. Well, the hecklers stormed the stage, trashed the venue, and the Chicago police arrested the priest, not the hecklers. The priest was convicted of disorderly conduct, and the Illinois Appellate Court upheld his conviction, but the U.S. Supreme Court reversed the decision, quote, "for the reasons that they now have now become a well-accepted aspect of our jurisprudence. All innocuous speech is absolutely protected, and all speech is innocuous when there is time for more speech to challenge it," end of quote. So, Sam, bottom line here, the McKesson decision is ridiculous. McKesson neither caused any violence nor did he advocate any violence. And yet the court will allow a victim to sue him for what an unknown and unseen assailant did? The heckler's veto, right? This is astounding. It's absurd. And of course, I don't know, maybe the U.S. Supreme Court didn't take the case because it hadn't been finally adjudicated yet, like I mentioned earlier. And if McKesson is convicted, then I sure hope an appellate court will take the case and return to first principles. Otherwise, Sam, this would be a major blow to freedom in this country. Sam?
And the fact, ladies and gentlemen, that the right to assembly was literally obliterated in three states by the Supreme Court, literally criminal, ladies and gentlemen. We'll talk more in seconds with Lowell Nelson on your radio.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News. I'm Tim Berg. Gas prices are continuing to rise, going up again over the last few weeks. Oil industry analyst Trilby Lundberg on just how much we can expect the price at the pump to increase.
The gasoline pump price run-up did continue. We have another 10 cents more in the price. The new price is $3.77 for regular. And it's been rising for 15 weeks now. It's up 59 cents since early January.
Lundberg says the unrest in the Middle East and Ukrainian targeting of Russian oil infrastructure is helping to aid in the instability of the crude oil market. Tennessee police are continuing to investigate after at least two people are dead and six others are injured after a shooting at a Memphis block party. Police saying hundreds were gathered at the party at Orange Mound Park on Saturday when officers responded to emergency calls and found two men dead at the scene. Police are continuing to look for the suspects. Some House Republicans are extremely angry with Speaker Johnson, who works with Democrats and does not include money for U.S. border security in the $95 billion aid package. USA's Laura Winters reports.
Now, some Republicans in the House furious with Johnson for working with Democrats to get this all passed. Here's Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, followed by Texas Congressman Chip Roy.
America last. America last. That's all this is. Every single day, America last.
Gentlewoman's time has expired.
I'm frustrated that there was zero border security in the bill. But let's be very clear. That border bill, H.R. 2, that was voted on today, will have no force of law, was not part of the package, was done as a cover vote, and gave cover to five Democrats who voted for it. It's mind-bogglingly stupid to have put that on the floor.
The bill now heads to the Senate, where preliminary voting could take place as soon as Tuesday. This is USA News.
The inventor and CEO of MyPillow is always looking for ways to solve everyday problems. Have you ever picked up a towel set because it felt really soft in the store, but then when you go to use it, it's not very absorbent? It's basically a towel that's leaving you out to dry. That's why MyPillow has developed the MyPillow towels. Towels that work. I know, it's mind-blowing. Towels that actually dry you. The six-piece towel set includes two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths. They come in a variety of colors, and right now you can receive a six-piece set for only $39.98 with promo code USA. Go to MyPillow.com right now and click on the radio listener special. MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. To receive this amazing offer on the six-piece set of MyPillow towels, just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener special, and enter promo code USA or call 800-951-8175. That's MyPillow.com, promo code USA.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Lowell Nelson, a guest here on Liberty Roundtable Live. Sam Bushman is the real engine behind this show, and I'm happy to count him as a friend and neighbor. Love being on Liberty Roundtable. We've been talking about some pretty important things this morning: freedom of speech, freedom of assembly. We would talk about jury voir dire process and how that's a corruption of the original trial by jury process. And now I'm jumping into another article, this one by Jacob G. Hornberger, entitled "The National Security Branch Rules the Roost." Well, this is a strongly worded column, folks, with which all Americans should be familiar. You can find it at ronpaulinstitute.org. Hornberger starts out this way, quote, "If there's anything that confirms that the National Security Branch of the federal government rules the roost within the federal government structure, it is the Pentagon CIA Torture and Indefinite Detention Center at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. That facility stands as an ongoing testament to the overarching power of the Pentagon, the CIA, and the NSA within America's governmental structure, and the deference to their authority displayed by the executive, legislative, and judicial branches of the federal government," end quote. Well, Hornberger then explains that, you know, if the DEA did to drug war suspects what the CIA and Pentagon did to terrorism suspects at Guantanamo Bay, then the courts would immediately order the DEA to return the suspects to America and give them due process. Because at Guantanamo Bay, basically, they hold the suspects there indefinitely without due process, without trial, without any hope of a trial or due process. And they just rot there. It's like they're there forever. So he's saying that if the DEA did that, well, the courts would immediately order the DEA to change their practice. Well, but not so, he writes, with the National Security Establishment's torture and indefinite detention camp in Cuba. The Supreme Court and the lower federal courts do not dare interfere with them. That's because the National Security Branch is the most powerful branch within the federal governmental system. It rules the federal roost. Continuing on, he writes, quote, "It's the same with the executive and legislative branches. They are powerless to bring the forever horror story of Gitmo to an end. That's because those two branches, just like the judicial branch, operate in deferential support of the most powerful branch, the branch that rules the roost within the federal governmental system, the National Security Branch. There has been only one president who has taken on the National Security Branch of the federal government. That president was John F. Kennedy, and he lost. Not surprisingly, no president since him has dared to do what he did." End of quote. And then Hornberger says, he refers to the Freedom Foundation's book, which is entitled JFK's War with the National Security Establishment, Why Kennedy Was Assassinated. And this book was written by Douglas P. Horn, who served on the staff of the Assassination Records Review Board in the 1990s. Continuing on, Hornberger writes, quote, "Longtime readers of my blog know that I have long recommended a book entitled National Security and Double Government by Michael J. Glennon. Glennon's thesis is that the national security part of the government, that is, the Pentagon, the CIA, and the NSA, is in charge of the federal government, but permits the other three parts to maintain the veneer of being in charge, which enables Americans to feel like everything is normal. But it's anything but normal. It's an aberrant and abhorrent way of life that has killed and injured millions of people, wreaked massive destruction around the world, and destroyed our liberty and privacy here at home, all in the name of keeping us safe from the crises and official enemies that the national security state engenders with its interventionist policies. It bears mentioning that Glennon is not some quack. He is a professor of law at Tufts University and a former counsel to the Foreign Relations Committee. He is worth listening to. If every American, and this is the last paragraph from Hornberger's article, he says, quote, if every American would read Glennon's book, I have no doubt that we would be well on our way toward leading the world to freedom, peace, prosperity, and harmony through the dismantling of the national security state and the restoration of America's founding governmental system of a limited government republic, end of quote. And that's the end of the column. Now, Sam, it's very interesting. See, Hornberger writes this. He recommends a couple of excellent, excellent books, neither of which I have read, by the way. Glennon's book, Michael G. Glennon, sounds very interesting to me, National Security and Double Government. And then, of course, the John F. Kennedy story is also equally interesting to me. The one that is entitled JFK's War with the National Security Establishment, Why Kennedy Was Assassinated. And that book was written by Douglas P. Horne, who served on the staff of the Assassination Records Review Board in the 1990s. So both of these gentlemen are credentialed individuals. They're not quacks. And they come at their topic, I'm sure, with objectivity, with evidence, and with persuasive reason. Yeah, I'm just guessing, haven't read their books, but I'm guessing that's what they do. And so I am forwarding their Hornberger's recommendations onto you, dear listener, and in hopes that as we can spread the word about these abhorrent practices of the national security establishment, that we can begin to pull it down and reduce its tyrannical authority, reduce its power, and in order to restore the Confederated Republic we once had of limited government and one that does not support an interventionist foreign policy. Sam?
You know, Jacob writes some very insightful columns. One of the things I like the most about him is he's a real thinker, and he makes you think, too. Even constitutional scholars like yourself and myself, and, you know, we've been down a lot of these, you know, roads and you know, dealt with these topics many a times. But he sure brings a fresh, unique, very reflective perspective to the conversation every single time.
He really does, and I like the way, I mean, it's pretty hard-hitting. If you're listening to this for the very first time and you read something that Hornberger writes, you might be a little distressed because he makes some pretty bold statements. But the longer I live, Sam, the more evidence I see that the national security state does, in fact, have a very tight grip on our general government, officers and institutions of our general government, you know, the agencies, the CIA, the NSA, and other, you know, FBI, other black op groups. And therefore, the more persuaded I am that the national security state really does have a death grip on this country. And if we expect to restore this republic, we simply must recognize the writing on the wall. I mean, wasn't it Sam Adams who said, or maybe it was Thomas Paine who said, that he would prefer to know the truth rather than fantasize about what could be or what was supposed to be. We need
well,
to know
and it just
truth.
Highlights right now the House and the Senate both approved the extension of the warrantless surveillance law. Literally sending 702 directly to Biden after really we had promises they wouldn't do it. We had promises that they would let the bills be open for debate before passage. And they literally lied. Mike Johnson and crew lied about all of it. They shoved FISA down our throats, expanding it, in fact. And then they approved $95 billion in foreign aid for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. So we're basically a spy on the American citizens, declare war around the world mentality under the Republican House who controls the purse strings, under supposedly Christian Mike Johnson's leadership. This is the kind of stuff that we just cannot take. And the only way to solve it is for our greater numbers to stand up and push back hard, lol. We can be peaceful, but we've got to say, look, Johnson, you're gone. Look, members of Congress that voted for this, you're gone. You don't have authority just to fund war everywhere. You don't have authority just to violate the privacy rights of citizens everywhere. You don't have that authority or right. And you know what? You're violating your oath of office, protecting Americans from enemies, foreign and domestic, when you do these things. And so this is pretty clear, and Jacob's spot on with this. Go ahead and skip the break. Hornberger's spot on this. But you know what? Money is the key to all the problems that we face, really. The more money they have to just spend us into oblivion and use against us, the worse it seems to get. We can rein them in, though, when it comes to money, and that's, the, in my opinion, probably one of the most salient solutions we have to really stop the con game, lol.
Well, absolutely right, Sam. And I want to get to that after I make one observation about that FISA bill. Half of the representatives from Utah in the U.S. House, we have four. Two of them voted for the bill, and two of them voted against that bill. Celeste Malloy voted for it. John Curtis voted against it, probably because it's an election year for him. Because he wants
and good for him, whatever the reasons, at least it's something, right?
Yep, that's right. Burgess Owens voted against it. Blake Moore voted for it. So, even right here in River City, folks, we have some house cleaning to do. And these folks should be asked point blank. This is the week to do it. This is the week of the state convention. We are 5 days away from the state Republican Party convention here in Utah. And this is the week for every delegate to be asking, and it doesn't have to be a delegate. You can be a common citizen, and you can ask hard questions of these representatives. I want you to. I want you to join these teletown hall meetings and these cottage meetings and these debates and so forth all week long. They've been going on for 5 weeks, but this is the final week. I want you to hit them up with hard questions. And if they voted for the $95, I didn't look that one up, by the way. I'm not sure how the four reps voted on that, Sam, the $95 billion aid bill to Ukraine, but I will do so after this show. And I'm going to prepare these questions for them. Why did you vote for the aid bill to Ukraine? Show me in the Constitution where there's authorization, where the states vested in the general government authority to spend money overseas on undeclared war. Show me, show me, show me. I mean, this is the type of...
Doesn't exist. You could throw down a $1,000 gauntlet and say, if you can give it to me, I'll give you $1,000.
Yeah, absolutely, Sam. We need to do that. We need to sensitize our public servants. Not only does it sensitize the public servant, but those people around you who listen to you ask the question are educated at the same time. So you kill two birds with one stone. You educate your fellow citizens, your fellow delegates, as well as you sensitize the potential public servant to the need to follow the Constitution, to adhere to its principles, and to stop these undeclared wars around the world. I mean, this is the time to do it, folks. This week, we just got to do it. Okay.
Amen. And one other quick thing before we move on, though. I just want to say this. Even if they don't do all that we want, you know, when we stand up and we are counted, we have an influence, and they may be more conservative than they would. You mentioned that it's an election year, and so, hey, John Curtis might have voted against it for that reason. I don't know the reason. I'm giving kudos for voting against it. But you're right, though. The pressure from we the people, even if they don't do exactly what we want, they'll do a whole lot more what we want under the pressure than they will if there's no pressure. And that's something really to understand. This is an incremental, one of the articles I think Hornberger wrote about this incremental, you know, little piece by piece is how we got to fight these battles. That's how they're taking away our liberty, and that's how we can gain it. I mean, I appreciate the Hail Mary concept, but that's not the way that we consistently move the chains for liberty. The way we do that is just piece by piece, issue by issue. Even if they don't vote with us or stand with us every time, the more we stand up and the more we hold them to account, the more they will do what's right. Little by little is what matters. And I think we need to not lose sight of that, because that is, in there lies the solution, lol.
Well, you're spot on, Sam. And Michael Meharry illustrates that in this really excellent column posted at 10thAmendmentCenter.com. His column describes Utah's efforts towards sound money. I'm ending with this column, Sam, because it's an upbeat column. It's a success. It's a win. And describes what you just said about incrementalism. It was Thomas Jefferson who said, "The ground of liberty is to be gained by inches. We must be contented to secure the liberty we can get from time to time and eternally press forward for what is yet to get." End of quote. And, of course, John Dickinson, penman of the Revolution, he agreed when he wrote, "Small things grow great by concord." Yeah, he must have been a very thoughtful person, but because he also wrote that it takes time to persuade men to do even what is for their own good. Boy, howdy, isn't that true? Sometimes it takes, you know, 5 or 10 times before a person will actually do what, you know, is for their own good. And so, anyway, that's some wisdom from our founders. So Michael Meharry wrote this column, and he says that Utah laid the groundwork in 2011 with the passage of the Utah Legal Tender Act. The law made gold and silver coins issued by the federal government legal tender in the state. So that was one incremental step, okay, making gold and silver coins legal tender. This 2011 Utah Legal Tender Act also specified that the exchange of gold and silver coins for another form of legal tender does not create any individual income or sales tax liability. In other words, folks, it repealed both the state sales tax and the capital gains taxes on gold and silver. Because before 2011, if you bought a gold coin, you had to pay a tax. It's just like a sales tax on the gold coin that you bought. But by making gold and silver legal tender, now it's simply an exchange, because you can always go exchange gold for silver and silver for gold, you know, commodities, and you can exchange Federal Reserve notes for other Federal Reserve notes, right? A 20 for two tens, that's an exchange. Well, if you trade a Morgan silver dollar for a $20 Federal Reserve note, that's now an exchange. That's two forms of legal tender. You're simply trading them, and there's no sales tax and no capital gains tax. So that was a very important first step. And Sam, we can thank Larry Hilton, our friend Larry Hilton, for this. He just lives, you know, a couple miles from you and me. Larry Hilton came up with the idea, and then he worked tirelessly with legislators in 2009, 10, and 11, and with other stakeholders to win legislative approval that year, 2011. But there was a lot of work leading up to that, a year or two of work leading up to the January of 2011, and when it was approved, I think, in February of that year, maybe March of that year. Anyway, getting legislators to do something novel like this is it's far more difficult than getting legislators to do something that another state legislature has already done. That's why it took a couple of years of work to actually get that done. But Larry Hilton, kudos to him, he got her done. And then the following year, 2012, the Utah legislature renamed the act the Specie Legal Tender Act, which expanded the definition of specie legal tender beyond just the coins authorized by the feds, but also to include any gold and silver coins approved by the state. And Meharry writes this, quote, "By allowing additional specie to be used as legal tender, the Utah legislature freed its residents from potential supply constraints imposed by the use of only United States minted gold and silver coins. More importantly, the people of the state of Utah now define just what specie is, considered constitutional tender, which further distances them from potential control over their money by Washington, D.C. End of quote. So you see the progression here, folks. You see this distancing of the state from the Federal Reserve note, which was basically imposed by fiat by our national legislature. Well, so this opened the door for the development of a robust gold and silver market in Utah. Basically, we could coin our gold and silver here. Meaning entrepreneurs could. States cannot, but entrepreneurs could. So the United Precious Metals Association, which is UPMA, in partnership with the Alpine Gold Exchange, set up the state's first gold bank. And the UPA now has well over 50,000 accounts, and members live all over the country, not just in Utah. You can live in Oklahoma or North Carolina, whatever, doesn't matter. You can have a UPMA account. You can store gold or silver in the UPMA vault. And so why would a person do that? Well, you do that because the gold and silver maintains its value regardless of what the value of the Federal Reserve note does. And everybody knows that the Federal Reserve note is losing its value very, very quickly, precipitously over time. And pretty soon it'll be worth nothing. Well, by trading your Federal Reserve notes for some gold and silver, you preserve the value of what you've already earned. It's not really an investment. It's a defensive action that you take to preserve the value of what you've already earned. So going back to this, and so as a result of this, then goldbacks came into being. The Utah Specie Legal Tender Act led to the creation of the goldback, which is a local voluntary medium of exchange. A goldback is basically some gold encased in mylar. It looks like a banknote almost. Anyway, the one goldback contains 1/1000th of an ounce of gold. The five contains 5/1000ths of a troy ounce of gold, and so forth. These come in ones, fives, tens, 25s, and 50s. And you can actually hold a 50 in one hand and a 1 in the other hand, and you can tell a significant difference in weight, you know?
Yes, you can. Between the other thing that's interesting, I want to get to before the end of the hour, and we're about out of time. This incrementalism, they started with saying, hey, we're going to accept the Fed's constitutional currency, then the states. Then they expanded the law to, you know, not have it be taxed and all that, to be treated as money and just an exchange. Now in 2024, they're making even more expansion of this incredible effort. Lol.
Right. They now authorized, the legislature authorized the state treasurer to hold up to 10% of certain funds in silver, gold, platinum, copper, or palladium. And doing this really is a defensive hedge against the losses of the Federal Reserve note, which everyone knows is rapidly declining in value. And so holding gold and silver in reserve also creates a pathway for Utah to maintain financial independence should the U.S. dollar collapse. A very real possibility, folks, as the world moves away from the greenback as its reserve currency.
And over time, hopefully 10% becomes 25% and so on as we continue to incrementally move the chains for more liberty and more honest money transactions, lol.
That is a great way to end this show, Sam, because it seems really prudent. I was just talking to family about this last week. It would seem prudent to me to put a portion of your cash reserves, if you have some, into gold, silver, or into gold backs, because you can spend your gold really via credit card-like transactions, if you're a member of UPMA. And why not put, you know, a bunch of your spending money into specie legal tender? Because that's a wealth protection type of action, whereby you preserve the value of the money that you have earned previous to now.
And while we're trying to back our money with constitutional currency and honest weights and measures, as the Bible puts it, or sound money, as it's put in modern times, the Mises Institute and others, you know, your government is literally trying to move to these digital controlled government currencies and take us away from the dollar. We've got to reject that as well. This is a much better path to take, and we need to highlight more and more and more the differences of what path we're on versus what path your federal government's, you know, recommending you go down. And you can see the divergence in the truth in our plan and the dishonesty and immorality and danger of their plan as we continue, lol.
By the way, other states have followed Utah's lead. Wyoming, Oklahoma, Arkansas, they have since made gold and silver the legal tender. We have goldbacks in Nevada, New Hampshire, South Dakota, and Utah, and coming to probably a couple more states in the later this year, Sam.
And we're going to incrementally continue to gain ground faster and faster and faster as we stand with honest money. Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org. Thank you, sir, doing a phenomenal job as always.
You're welcome, Sam. It's my pleasure.
LovingLiberty.net, campaignforliberty.org, libertyroundtable.com. God save the Republic of the United States of America.